to fear in heaven. Right? This is how Kina Chof opens. Hatei Elokai Aznecha, right? Open your ear. Listen, Hashem. Hear what they're saying about you. Hear the tremendous degradations and humiliations. Your adversaries are screaming out, Aru, Aru, Ada Yisod. Raise the building, destroy it to the foundations. They're doing it right there at Shar Shamayim. So the first part of this Kina is about the degradation, the humiliation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then we continue, and the rest, in the end especially, is all about the different humiliations that we suffered. Especially the last three stanzas, Ani Va'af Si'od, Ushema Gidufea V'cheirufea, Mishtachetzes Ad Kis'acha Od, certain heresy and blasphemy, etc. All sorts of things. People are taunting and mocking us. Second to last part. Hakei Aznecha, listen, Lebozo, Malegas, Ma, Tochili Ve'eno Nivneh. They're taunting us. What? You have hope. You think this is going to be rebuilt, right? They're taunting us. They're making fun of us that we are forsaken. And it's a really, you know, painful kina that speaks about the various, again, as different humiliations and the cherpacha and the different bushot and cherpot that we and HaKadosh Baruch Hu experience throughout the experience of Chorban and of Galus. But about right in the middle of the Kina, maybe a little bit below that, if you have the Koran, it's the top of page 409, is the stanza that begins, Hatei Elokai Aznecha, Yaharu V'Hotziu Hakruvim, V'Recho Vos Mechazrim. This is a reference to the fact that the arrogant ones, our enemies, they took out the Kruvim. They took them out of the Beis HaMikdash and they displayed them on the streets. I would say the Pashtus is, earlier in the week I had a Havamina, maybe we would study this idea a little bit more in depth. There are different opinions or different versions of this story, both in the Gemara and the Medrash. I would say the Pashtus, I assume, is that this was referring to something that took place in the time of the first Korban. Because there was no Arun, right? It was Gunas in the second Korban. And yet there's a Rashi on the Ein Yaakov, there might be different versions of the Medrash which might think that it's describing something that happened in the second Beis HaMikdash, maybe not to the actual Kruvim, but to the pictures of the Kruvim that were up in the Beis HaMikdash. But either way, this is a story that is described and recounted by Chazal and referenced here in this Kina of the Kruvim being taken out both as a way of humiliating Hashem and taunting Am Yisrael. If you take a look at sources 11 and 12 in your source page, we see a very famous stira. Famous, this is already asked by the Rishonim in the various Gemaras, both in Baba Basra and in Yuma, a very famous stira in the Gemaras about the position of the Kruvim during the Chorban. On the one hand, the Gemara in Baba Basra tells us, source number 11, that there was different traditions in general, even in the good times, how the Kruvim were faced. One opinion was Panayim Ish El Achiv, that they used to face each other, these two cherubs with these baby-like faces. The other opinion is Panayim Labayis, they were facing more towards the Aron itself, I guess looking down, not looking up, or at each other, straight ahead. So it seems to be a contradiction. So the Gemara answer is no. Kam Bezman Shi Yisrael Osen Ritzon and Shalmakom, when the Jewish people are behaving nicely, so as a simon of that, the Kruvim are looking at each other lovingly. But Khan, Bizman Shein Israel Osin Ritzon Shalmakom. But they're looking away from each other, Klape, you know, Elabayas, when they are not doing Ritzono Shalmakom. Okay, so that's, you know, the facts, that's the background. So comes along the Gemara in source number 12, Masechta Yuma, and tells us in the name of Reish Lakish, Basha Sheniknesu Nacharim Lahechol, Ro Kruvim Hamurim Zebazeh. In fact, they were in a very intimate, loving pose, the Kruvim with each other. And in fact, this is one of the versions of the Gemara that says how the Goyim took the Kruvim out, Totsiun Lashuk, V'amru, Yisra Halalu, Shabirchasan Bracha, V'Kilasan Kalala, Yasku B'Dvarim Halalu. These Jews who think they're so holy that when they daven for a Bracha, they're going to get it. When they daven for their enemies to be cursed, they're going to get it. And these are the people that this is their religious things, these kalim, this intimate, almost sexual type of image, miyad izilim, they're ridiculing us, as the Pasuk in Eicha indicates. Right, so that's a second Gemara. So a lot to say just on the on each in the Gemara independently, but I want to focus on the Gemaras as they are in conjunction with each other, and that is the question that many of the Rishonim ask, which seems to be an obvious stira. If according to the Gemara in Baba Basra, the Kruvim are only looking towards each other, Bezman She'osin Ritzon Shalmakom, then what would we have expected when the time of the Churban? We would have expected them to have their back towards each other. We obviously weren't doing Ritzon Shalmakom, we were getting punished. The Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed. And yet, shockingly and surprisingly, the Gemara tells us that when they came in, the Kruvim were, you know, whatever exactly the Gemara means, but at minimum looking at each other, if not even more so. So what is going on? So perhaps there's, I think in classical and earlier Mefarshim, I found 10 different explanations to this. But I don't want to share that one, I want to share an 11th. And this is something that I heard on a recording from a few years ago, originally from Rav Lopiansky. And he recounted something that he heard from somebody named Rav Pinchas Grumman. The incredible thing is, I Googled his name. He just died last week. A little over a week ago. He was a Holocaust survivor who was one of the Choshev Rabbanim. I don't know if we have anyone from L.A. in the moment in the room. One at least, right? Did you know the name? Grumman? He was a rabbi of a shul. I think he was involved in Beis Yaakov. Anyway, he lived in, if I'm not mistaken, he might have been 90 when he passed away. You could Google it. In my Google of his name, Yeshiva World News came up. And it was sad this day announced that he had just passed away. One of the Ziknei Rabbanim of Los Angeles for many, many decades. A very tremendous leader. Anyway, so apparently, I don't know if it was in Eretz Yisrael or in Los Angeles, but he personally told the following story that he experienced. He told this story to Rav Lopiansky, and that was shortly after the Holocaust, shortly after the war, as kind of things were trying to get back to normal. So there was a yeshiva that was set up in France. And the Rosh Yeshiva was a legendary figure of the pre-war Lithuanian yeshiva world, Rav Motel Progromansky. I don't know how many people know of him. He died a very young and premature death, unfortunately. In Lithuania, in Europe, he was known as from the biggest Iluim in all of the Litvisha yeshiva world. Incredible genius in Lomdus, a Bal Regesh. There's a whole, there's a French Wikipedia entry about him. But you can translate, I learned. You can translate to Wikipedia. Anyway, but there's also, you can find more traditional historical biographies about him as well. He was, if I'm not mistaken, he grew up in a very traditional or not even traditional house. He certainly didn't grow up in a yeshivish house. And I can't remember the whole story, but one of the Rosh Yeshivas of the Gedolim, I think, kind of met him, and they were so taken and awed by his genius, they kind of took him in, and within a few years, he was the star. They thought he was going to be, if there wouldn't have been a war, if he had married the right person, his daughter, he would have been the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells. He was from the Gedole of geniuses, but also, as Rav Lavyansky referred to, as a real Bal Regesh, just an incredibly emotional, the high IQ, not just intellectually IQ, but emotional EQ, just an incredibly captivating person. Anyone who was near him just got swept up by him. So he had this yeshiva for some time, a little bit after the war in France. And this young Pinchas, who unfortunately just passed away at a ripe old age, recently in Los Angeles, he was a Talmud there in that yeshiva in France. So he said, one day I was learning by myself in the Beis Medrash, when the Rosh Yeshiva and Rav Motel came in. And he sat down on a bench by himself in the front of the Beis Medrash. And this young Pinchas was precocious. And he figured that might be something good's about to happen, or something interesting. So he moved up from his seat and he sat at the end of the same bench that the Rosh Yeshiva was sitting on, so he could see what the Rosh Yeshiva might be learning or hear what the Rosh Yeshiva might be saying to himself. And he said, you know, when Rav Motel would be lost in thought, he had no idea who was in the room, let alone who was on the same bench as him. So I was able to get away with it. And slowly but surely, Rav Motel starts swaying back and forth, gets lost in his own thought, and then he starts talking to himself. Again, he himself lost his family, went through the war. And this Pinchas recounts word for word what he overhears Rav Motel saying. Says, is Gornid Gablibin in Kovna? There's nothing left in Kavna. Nishkin tata, nishkin mama. There's no mother, there's no father. Nishkin bruder, nishkin schwester. There's no brother, there's no sister. Nishkin freind, und nishkin feind. There are no friends, and there aren't even any enemies. Nor ich, just me, und du, and you. Ich, und du. Ich, und du. Me, and you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no one else left. Kavna, my previous world, is gone, destroyed. The only thing left, nor ich, undu. At that time, the young Pinchas said, the Rosh Hashiva was in a different world. He was in a world of ich, undu. And for a long time, he said, he just sat there. And every now and then, he'd repeat the same thing, chazering over and over again. Gurnish gablibin in kovna. Nishkin tata, nishkin mama. Nishkin bruder, nishkin schwester. Nishkin frein, und nishkin feind. Nor ich, und du. Just me, and you. The depth of that expression, the profound insight that was emotionally being expressed by that resilient but clearly broken Holocaust survivor, the omek of that hargasha, is what prevents us from being in that circle of ich and du, is because for us, there are so many other things around. Out of his complete loneliness, out of completely being alone, given who he wasn't despairing, he was coming to grips with the fact that the only thing that was left was him and Hashem, ich und du. And many of us, I hope all of us, on some level, at least at some times, we want to have that relationship with Hashem. We also would like to feel Hashem and to be as close with him as Rav Moshe Pargamowski felt that he was at that moment. We want to be part of that world. We want to enter that circle of ich und du. And the reason we can't isn't just because we're not on his level. It's because we have so many other things around us. Rabbi Lupiansky gave a very cute, but very, I think, effective mashal. He says, you know, when you get any of those like things that you're trying to build, it could be for kids or maybe adults sometimes try to build these kind of things that involve some kind of gluing. Right? So on the instruction sheets, you know, it always says that when you're gluing things together, both sides have to be completely clean, completely smooth. If there's anything on either of the sides, right, it's not going to stick. The glue won't hold it together. Well, it's the same thing with Hashem. The more things that are in between, so then the less we can connect, the less we can stick directly to Him. When we have other things, and even the Beis HaMikdash can turn into a thing, when we have other things, they can get in the way. But when there's nothing left, when there's no mother, there's no father, there's no brother, there's no sister, there's not a friend, there's not even an enemy, when it's all gone, all that's left is just one circle. Ich undu. And at the moment of Churban, when everything collapsed, when there was nothing else left, that was when the moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael felt the Kruvim were facing each other. The Jewish people had nothing. They didn't even have the Beis HaMikdash anymore. And it's ironically at that moment that Hashem showed them the ultimate truth. There's nothing else around. It's just you and me. It's ich und du. And this is something that we alluded to before, that if even the Beis HaMikdash can get in the way, then certainly a Shulchan Aruch could get in a way. It's very, very important. The Sfas Emes quotes his grandfather, the Chiddush Arim. I did a search on the Bar Ilan. I want to see how I found it at least in two places. That he has this tremendous Chiddush. If I ask you how to translate the word mitzvah, so this is an educated group, no one here is going to say good deed. That's in the Hamonam, they'll tell you that. But you know, you would say commandment. Mitzvah milashon tzivoy. But the Chiddush Arim said is mitzvah milashon tzavta. Tzavta means to be together, right? A charusa is limud b'tzavta. It's unbelievable, profound. Every mitzvah is supposed to be creation of a tzavta, of bringing us together with Hashem. That's what the mitzvahs are supposed to be. And if they're missing, if we don't feel that, then there's something missing in our mitzvahs. It's not just about the mitzvah. It's not just about the act. Like I said, we can't turn the act into the Avodah Zarah. Even a Beis HaMikdash, and certainly our mitzvahs, can get in the way if we don't have the right frame of mind. We have to use them as a way of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think this is something also powerfully for us to consider here in this kina. The Kruvim teach us that very powerful lesson, that sometimes we don't want it, but sometimes out of the depths of our despair, we realize that ultimate truth, that the only things we have left are us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course, it's a cliche, but I think it's a cliche because it's true. The lesson for us to learn from that is to appreciate and feel and connect with Hashem in the good times when we have our bounty, so He doesn't have to take it away from us, to remind us that it really is all about ich and du.